Good evening. I'd like to call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Today is April 12th, 2023. Let the record reflect that it's 6:04 p.m. We are in the Davis Room 106 of the State Capitol. Today we have present with us Speaker Tilton, Representative McKay, Representative McCabe, Representative Allard, Representative Groh, Representative Gray, and myself, Rep. Carpenter. In the room we used to have somebody with us, but they stepped out. Okay, I would like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to silence your cell phones. The staff that will be assisting us today is Kevin Allen from the House Records. Thank you, sir, for being here. Zach Lawhorn with the LIO. Thank you, sir. And my staff, Kendra Broussard, is the committee aide. This evening, we have one order of business to bring up. We're going to bring forward a committee substitute for House Bill 109. Representative McCabe, do you have a motion?
Yes, we do. Yes, I do. Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill number 109, Work Draft 33-LS0376-B, as our working document.
Object.
Thank you for the objection, and I will ask my staff to come forward to the table and explain the changes to the CS.
Through the chair, my name is Kendra Broussard, staff to Representative Carpenter. This CS, I'm going to explain the changes to the CS for House Bill 109. So the bill, there's not really any major changes. We've got HB House Bill 109, which is the reduced corporate net income tax rate, and then HB 142, which is the state sales and use tax bill. We are combining them into one bill, so they're not, both those bills are the same, just putting them into one. There's a new title, which says an act reducing the corporate net income tax rate relating to a sales and use tax, authorizing the Department of Revenue to enter into the streamlined sales and use tax agreement, and providing for an effective date. There are no other changes after the title, except renumbering sections and combining effective date provisions. That's what I have.
Thank you, Kendra. Let the record reflect that Representative Krog joined us at 6:06. So the purpose for creating this CS at this time is to bring together a couple of components into one vehicle that can be considered for a long-term fiscal plan. Not all taxes are the same. We still have some discussion to go forward. Corporate income taxes can have a significant impact to state's business climate, at the same time cause instability to our fiscal plan. Sales taxes are the most stable, least economically disruptive of our broad-based tax options. This bill creates incentives for municipalities to reduce property taxes. Coupled with a corporate income tax reduction, this CS will replace the current tax structure with a more stable way to fund government and ensure Alaskans can keep their PFD. At this time, are there any questions from the committee? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chair. So when we initially discussed House Bill 109, we mentioned that over 70% of our corporate income tax comes from oil and gas, and there was a suggestion that we might be able to make up that revenue from oil and gas in another way. I'm curious that, so I guess what I would say is then I would have expected to maybe have that combined with the oil and gas revenue rather than with the sales tax. And for me, I can debate different ways of talking about the sales tax, but I just feel like that we're taking, we're giving a tax break to oil companies, and we're making up for it with all the citizens of the state of Alaska paying a tax. And for me, I'm just curious about why the decision to pair it with the sales tax and not with the per barrel oil tax credit, for example.
Thank you, Representative Gray. So the choice to pair these two bills is my choice as the chair, an assessment on what I think is possible to move forward as a fiscal plan. As I said a minute ago, we still are going to have a conversation about taxes. The act, the action that we're taking today is just to combine two pieces into one bill for discussion's sake. And that's all that we're doing today. We're not taking amendments today, which means we'll take amendments at a later date. And if we need to amend in other things or amend out other things from this bill, then that conversation can still happen. But what I'm intending to do is narrow down the number or reduce down the number of bills that would be necessary. Sorry, I will say pieces of legislation that would be necessary to move through the legislature as a fiscal plan. Instead of moving two tax bills, we move one tax bill. So I'm not in any way saying we don't have a conversation about what needs to be in these bills. These are my ideas, and I'm asking the committee to bring forward their ideas, and we will collectively make a decision. Representative Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a whole bunch of questions, but I wanted to start with one, which will have a necessary follow-up. Do you have an estimate, Mr. Chairman, or perhaps your staff does, of, we're turning to the sales tax components of the bill, how much is raised from this proposed sales tax from essentials like groceries, clothing, household cleaning supplies, other common goods?
No, I do not have an assessment.
Okay. Because when I first looked at this in the CS, I thought, Chairman Carpenter proposing to tax groceries so that we can have the reduced corporate income taxes of more than $350 million a year? Because it seems like I think the groceries component alone may be on the order of $350 million a year. I'd like a better estimate, of course. And I was just wondering if that was a trade-off in your mind was intentional.
Representative Groh, like I said, I don't have an assessment on the individual sectors of the economy that would be putting into a sales tax. I think it's a mischaracterization to say that the legislation before us is offering a tax on food so that a corporate income tax reduction can happen. That is mischaracterizing, because there are other sectors of the economy that would be paying a sales tax as well. So that would be a tax on vehicles, and that would be a tax on services and everything that the sales tax bill would be levying a tax on, right? So it's not a fair comparison to say it's just food.
Okay.
It as it currently stands, it is on food.
Sure.
And there is a component that's being added into the CS or combined into the CS that is a corporate income tax reduction. So it's partially accurate, but it doesn't paint an entire picture. And I would just say further that to the extent that we can get an analysis on what sectors of the economy would be paying into a sales tax, that's a valuable part of the conversation.
Thank you. I do have a follow-up question.
Sure.
I know it's a little hard to count, but I counted at least 17 proposed exemptions to the sales tax, but not including food, WIC, various other items that are sometimes exempted. I personally observed, and I may be the only member of this legislature that's helped administer a sales tax when I was the attorney for the sitting borough of Sitka. And what I saw was they start out with a lot of exemptions and end up with way more. So I would just observe that and just note that with at least 17 exceptions to this proposed sales tax bill, it does not include such common items. Like I said, that and taxing them helps make the sales tax even more aggressive than otherwise be.
Well, Representative Groh, I will stipulate that before we have any sort of a fiscal plan pass this legislature, we are undoubtedly going to have a conversation about exemptions on a sales tax bill. Same thing would be on an income tax bill, to the extent that you could exempt certain classes of people from having to pay taxes. We're going to have that conversation too if we're putting a income tax forward, right? So it is part of the conversation that is going to happen.
I do have other questions, Mr. Chairman. I can pose them now.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. As I said, you're proposing a corporate income tax reduction that would end up costing the state $350 million or more a year. Can you provide any concrete evidence or studies that that demonstrate a clear causation between lowering corporate income tax rates and significant sustainable economic growth?
We can show examples from other states, Representative Groh, of where tax reductions and instituting low broad-based taxes has a positive impact on economic growth.
Okay. If you follow up, Mr. Chairman, if your goal was to make our state more attractive for businesses, were there other options that you considered, like investing in education, infrastructure, and or workforce development?
Representative Groh, as part of a fiscal plan?
Well, I mean, if we're going to reduce the taxes by $350 million, which is $350 million a year, more than $350 million a year in foregone income, and there may be other ways, and I was just offering a few, that might be designed to try to increase jobs, as you have said, instead of lowering corporate income tax rates.
So the plans that we have, the pieces of legislation that we have before us that are modeled after the Fiscal Policy Working Group are the pieces of legislation that you're fully aware that is before us. So no, we don't have a piece of legislation that deals with the BSA before us. That wasn't a conversation that we had in the Fiscal Policy Working Group and not something that I'm attempting to have within this framework of a fiscal plan to address the reduction of tax revenue to the state because of a corporate income tax reduction. That is offset by a sales tax proposal that raises taxes so that there is a net positive gain of about $700 million in taxes to the state. So to acknowledge that we do have a reduction of revenue from a corporate income tax reduction, that would be countered by a revenue increase from a tax that doesn't currently exist, which is the proposal is the sales tax.
Mr. Sherman, isn't there also a question of who's going to pay? The sales tax, of course, would be paid mostly by Alaskans, also by obviously some tourists. Whereas could the corporate income tax, more than $300 million a year in relief or reductions, go to stock buybacks, dividend payouts, or dividend payouts, which would not stimulate economic growth?
Representative Groh, possibly. I don't presume to know what corporate interests would do with additional revenue, but I have faith that corporate interests are incentivized to make money, and they need to invest money to make money. So the more money that they can keep for their own, the more likely they are to have money to be able to spend to invest on business growth. So that's how I would answer that question. I can't predict what a tax windfall for those companies would be, how they would use that money. But I can tell you that if the state takes it, they won't have it to use.
In terms of the sales tax proposal by itself, it would tend to hit harder at rural communities where prices are much higher, where you hear regularly stories of a gallon of milk costing $10, way more than it would in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau. Have you explored possible exemptions or reduced rates for goods or services, for goods and services that are critical for those areas, like fuel or food or utilities?
The current proposal, Representative Groh, doesn't have an exclusion for any of that. Like I said earlier, we're having a conversation about taxes, and if there's a proposal to exempt certain populations, then that is the conversation that we will have. I'm certainly open to having that conversation in this committee before we do take any action on any of the tax proposals that are before us.
Okay. I thank you. I do want to say that I think that there are, as we've discussed before at this committee table, issues of who pays the tax with the sales tax. As the ICER study has shown, 80% of Alaskans would do better under an income tax than a sales tax. The people who would do particularly worse would often live in rural areas, and particularly also facing a lot of difficulties would be businesses who sell in communities which already have sales taxes, of which there are dozens and dozens around Alaska. where they would be facing off and seeing additional sales tax on the state sales tax proposed by this bill that would be layered on top of the existing municipal sales tax that we have already. I look forward to exploring this more with you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And since we're in an open dialogue here, Representative Groh, I would just add to that conversation that while any additional tax is going to fall on some Alaskan, the sales tax is a tax that would fall on all Alaskans to the extent that the alternative right now, as it sits within the legislature, is no tax on any Alaskan other than they will not get a PFD into the future. That is what ICER would have recommended several years ago as the most regressive form of taxation on Alaskans. So the concept of bringing forward a sales tax, in my estimation, is something that is calculating what is fair for Alaskans and what is possible to pass through the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to add, there is an income tax bill that got referred to this committee, and I understand there's going to be some consideration of that. I would call high earner plus chip in tax proposal. In addition, although not before this committee, in terms of tax proposals, there are at least two different oil tax bills, one in the Senate Bill 114, and then one in the House, which I have sponsored on the oil and gas property tax. So I think there are a variety of alternatives that are in this legislature, some in this committee and some in other committees.
Thank you, Representative Groh. Representative McCabe and then Representative Allard.
Thank you. So, Representative Groh, you made a comment a minute ago that sort of triggered me. You said that a dividend doesn't create any economic benefit.
I didn't say about a dividend.
Okay. That wasn't me. Sounded like I heard you say a dividend.
No.
You juxtaposed the dividend and then said that there was no economic benefit from the dividend. And I.
No. Corporate dividend. If I said anything, it's about a corporate dividend. I didn't mention.
Okay. So I would submit that we put that one to bed right now. The free money that comes into the private economy returns 9 times to the economy itself versus money going into the government pocket is 1.2 times. So there is some sort of economic churn and benefit that happens from money that gets put into private hands. You also mentioned the corporate income tax and lowering the corporate income tax. And I don't think this lowering of the corporate income tax is really, yes, we will lose some money, but it's not really pointed at the oil companies that are already here. They've already learned how to do business under the 9.4% tax that we have. This is designed to attract businesses. Is it going to be painful while we do that? Absolutely. But the oil companies right now, they're kind of ambivalent from the ones I've talked to about losing, getting a 7% gain in their corporate tax. In other words, they don't really care because they know how to do business right now under 9.4%. So I'm not even really thinking about them. I'm thinking about the businesses that are going to come to Alaska. And I will tell you, as a business, having been in small businesses before, the last thing on my mind was whether or not the BSA was increased to 6,700 or education for a businessman that is establishing a new business in Alaska is probably at the very bottom of the list. So thinking, in my opinion, that increasing somehow the education availability or the for my workers. Man, I just want to find a building. I want to find a lease. Do I need a forklift? What am I going to, as far as establishing the business, and a 2% corporate tax to me would be a bigger, hugely bigger carrot, I think, than whether or not we had teachers that were in lower class sizes and happy and that sort of thing, at least initially, to establish a business. So those were a couple of things that I was just thinking of. One more thing. You also said that Alaskans would pay the sales tax. Don't forget, we get 1.2 million tourists in Alaska every year. That's almost a little bit under twice the number of Alaskans that are actually paying taxes. So I think, you know, we juxtapose this all the time. People say, well, there's all those people on the North Slope that work up there. And we went through that, the fiscal policy working group, and really it was a wash. The number of people that work on the North Slope that are from out of state and the tourists that come into it made no difference, really, the difference in amount of money we collect for people from out of state.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Groh, you can respond.
Briefly. I've just met a bunch of business people in Anchorage and as well as people come into my office since I got elected to the legislature here in Juneau, who have very much been in favor of having greater amenities, such as increasing the BSA, having a better educational system, having good roads as an important factors in decision making for the operation of their businesses. I also want to say that I think it's a very important distributional question. What I said was the substantial bulk of the sales tax we paid by Alaskans, because Alaskans are by and large here all year round. The tourists are here in a pretty small part of the year, relatively brief period of the year. Some spend obviously more money than others. So I do think it's important to understand that, as I said before, and I don't think it's contested, that the substantial majority of the sales tax revenues under this proposal would be paid by Alaska residents.
Thank you, Representative Groh. Representative Allen.
Thank you. And I think Kevin's on it. I thought there was tourism was second or third of our leading revenue coming into the state. Can't remember how much the dollars are, so I'll have to look that up. But I wanted to follow up on a couple of comments that Representative Groh had stated in regards to the rural communities and how much their groceries are, because that is concerning. But they don't pay property taxes. So there's a lot that it will offset. So when you're in Anchorage, we have high property taxes. Even the Valley has high property taxes, what I would consider high. In rural communities, they don't have that. So I understand your concern there. But with the offset with the corporate taxes, with the oil companies, like Representative McCabe, we have to entice the oil companies to come over, and it will hurt for a little bit. But if there is no way, I know you're focused on education and BSA, we're not going to be able to pay for it. Zero. I will tell you, there is no doubt in my mind, and I can't say 100%, education will not get better when you throw money at it. And people are leaving anyways because they can't afford to live here. They cannot afford to live here. Nobody will come up to pay for education. If you think our education is bad now, just wait. We have to figure out a way to solve the problem. But education growth and better education is absolutely tied to economic growth. It's just the facts. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Allard. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I would like to ask some questions about the bill, and I'd like to start with section 2. On page 2, lines 7, 8, 9, a taxpayer aggrieved by the action of the department in fixing the amount of a tax or penalty or the revocation or suspension of a seller's permit or resale may apply to the department. I'm just curious about this taxpayer grievance and the application process of, I guess, to get tax money back. Can you just, I was just a little bit confused about what that section was about.
Representative Gray, you are on page 2 of
the work draft. Am I on the right? Can I look at yours? I'm afraid that mine's wrong. No, that's right. Okay. Line 7, section 2 is amended to read, and then it's about a taxpayer being aggrieved by the action of the department and fixing the amount of tax. And I was just curious what that meant or what that was referring to.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I can get back an answer with you. I think it would be the best if that would work.
I have a couple more.
So the Representative Gray, let me take a stab at it.
Okay.
And we can get a better answer.
Okay.
The revocation of a suspension of a seller's permit or a resale exemption certificate under the current statutes that exist.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, and I'm just reading through the rest of the statute here to say, basically, this is providing a way for a taxpayer that's aggrieved because of action the department in fixing the amount of the tax or penalty or the revocation of the suspension of the seller's permit may apply to the department within 60 days of the mailing of the notice to be given the, by the taxpayer of the department. So this is establishing a process for when the department revokes the suspension of the seller's permit for them to deal with that.
Thank you. Through the chair, on page 7, when it talks about applying for seller's permits, and this is where I just have to confess my own lack of knowledge. I'm not a business owner in Alaska. But can you talk about when it says, you know, that anyone that moves or that wants to do business in the state has to obtain a seller's permit? I'm not familiar with the seller's permit process or what a seller's permit is. And can we just learn what seller's permits are?
Representative Gray, I'm not a subject matter expert in the tax either, so I can take your question down and get a subject matter expert. It looks like Representative Allard might have a response.
I might have a response.
You can have a response.
I might have a response. So in the summer, there was a guy that came up from the lower 48, and there was a big rally of our former President Trump, and he had to get a seller's permit for T-shirts. So I don't know if that's part of it. I know that sounds so common sense or something, but what's that? Yeah, and he had to go through the state in order to get a seller's permit, and I think that's what it is. It could be for food trucks.
So let me answer the question by saying, one, we can get a more qualified answer, and two, the verbiage that's in the bill before us says that before engaging in business in this state, a person shall obtain a seller's permit, which means that if they have a business license to do business, they're going to need a seller's permit to sell. Therefore, the state knows that they should be collecting sales tax.
Yes.
Roger. Hey, through the chair, thank you. I've been trying to read through the bill as it stands now, and I apologize that I didn't do it before I sat here. But as I'm reading through it, I keep having to check the list of changes because – and I guess, again, and maybe the staff or the chair can talk to it – Section 1 and 2 are from HB 142. Section 3 is from HB 109. Section 4 and 5 are from HB 142. Section 6 from 109. It's confusing for me to have to remember, oh, this is corporate income tax cut, and now we're back to sales tax and then corporate income tax cut. And I don't know if that's what Ledge Legal said they had to do it, that they had to go back and forth between the two, but it makes it hard. If I didn't have this key, I wouldn't know whether I was talking about the corporate income tax cut or the sales tax when reading through the bill.
And I can respond to that.
Okay.
Representative Gray. So we had two separate bills. One of them was a corporate income tax reduction, and the other one was instituting a statewide broad-based sales tax. The request that we made to Legislative Legal Services was to combine those two into one piece of legislation. The way they go about doing that is following their legislative drafting manual, and there wasn't a request from my office to do it this way. This is just how the drafters drafted the piece of legislation to now be one piece of legislation that does both a corporate income tax reduction and implement a statewide sales tax. So if there are questions regarding how the bill is drafted, then we'll have to address those to the Legislative Legal Services. But there should not be any substantial changes between the language that was in either of the two bills included in this bill. Substantively, they're the same thing in one piece of legislation.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'll say I will print off the two older versions because it'll be easier for me to keep them to think about the two bills separately. I mean, at least that's how I feel in this moment reading through it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, our office can also produce a sectional analysis that might help with that, and I can get that out at a later date.
Okay. Thank you.
Seems to me that it goes.
Representative McCain.
Thank you. Through the chair, it goes in statute order. So this starts at the lowest statute, and that's why it was put together that way, because the other bills were. So they just fit each separate statute in there. So,
a numbering hierarchy.
However, each individual member would like to phrase it to for their own understanding. All I will say is that the lawyers and the legislative legal services have a drafting manual that they follow, and that is why the bill looks the way that it does, is because they're following a procedure that they're supposed to. Representative Groh.
Representative Carpenter, you had another point. You talked about the fiscal policy working group, which has been frequently discussed here in this committee. Did the fiscal policy working group, I'm trying to remember, did it recommend a reduction in the corporate income tax?
No, I don't believe that it did. And Representative Groh, good question. At the beginning of some of our discussions here, I had indicated that economic growth was something that I added to the fiscal policy working group recommendations for this committee, that part of the charter of Ways and Means was to help with growing our economy. And to that extent, a corporate income tax reduction was identified by myself as a way to do that. And so it is not directly recommended from the fiscal policy working group, but it was added to the report that was generated.
Thank you.
Representative Groh.
Thank you. Through the chair, when I'm looking at pages 10 and 11, I'll start by asking about page 11, line 20, quitting business, liability of successor. And again, I'm saying this is somebody who's never owned a business in Alaska. So some of this is just, it's probably basic to most people. Within 10 days after a person quits business, sells, exchanges, or otherwise transfers the business or disposes of the complete stock of goods of the business, the person shall file a return and pay the taxes due under this chapter. I guess I'm confused about filing a return for the sales tax. And I guess,
Representative Groh, so with a sales tax that is collected by businesses and remitted to the jurisdiction, whether it's a city, borough, or state, there's a document that goes with that that is considered a return. And that is showing what were the sales for that time period and what is the tax that was collected and remitted. And this particular piece of legislation says that if a business is going to stop doing business, then their final action needs to be a return to the state and a remittance of tax owed for that time period.
For what they sold?
For what they sold, yes.
Okay. That was the confusing part, is I thought, like, for the complete stock of goods. Okay. And if it's okay, can I follow up on page 10?
Sure.
So the deduction of bad debts. And again, this is, coming back to that me wrapping my head around sales tax and the filing of returns. A person filing a return may deduct sales found to be worthless. I guess, can someone give me an example?
Representative Groh, I am not going to be able to answer that question. I will have to delay answer and find somebody who can has a subject matter expertise there.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Representative McCabe.
I suspect that much of this language is boilerplate taken from another state or taken from CSG or NCSL or some sort of group that has put these together before. The bad debt deduction is a pretty standard thing you get to write off. So if you, at the end of the year, whenever the report is due, if you have a debt that's uncollectible, so if you've repaired somebody's car and you put a couple tires on it and they drove off and didn't pay you for it and you never see them again, you get to sort of write off that bad debt, if you will. I don't know as much about it as I probably think I do, but it seems to be pretty boilerplate.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And I don't have a problem finding an attorney that specializes in taxation to help us understand why the value of this.
I think a little bit of this is, you know, we're getting a little bit into the minutia, maybe a little bit putting the cart before the horse. You know, I mean, really, to me, this is just kind of a 30,000-foot level overview and looking at it. And all of these are really good questions that we'll eventually have to answer, I'm sure.
Yeah, agreed. I appreciate you bringing the questions up because we obviously don't want to put a tax forward or any piece of legislation that we don't fully understand what it is, right? Just because I can't explain it to you doesn't mean that it doesn't have a good explanation. Representative McKay.
Yeah, I think if I could thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. I think that, you know, the essence of what we're discussing, I think, is really pages 1, 2, and 3. Your corporate income tax reduction is basically page 2, line 20 through page 3, line 19. And then your sales tax is page 3, line 20 to 31. And it gives you a schedule of the corporate income tax rates, and then it's basically a 2% sales and use tax. And that, I agree with Representative McCabe that a lot of the language after that is legal jargon that needs to be in a law, but for policymaking, it's really just these two pages. That's be my suggestion to the group.
Thank you, Representative McKay.
I can ask one more.
Representative Gray, that's why we're here.
Thanks. So this is in response to Representative McKay. When we go to page 13, and again, disclaimer, I'm not a business person, municipal share, which is line 20. And the reason why I bring this particular paragraph up is because it talks specifically about the general fund. So I feel like this one is, I feel like whoever was writing this, it's writing for Alaska. Like, the department shall separately account for the revenue collected from the tax under this chapter that the department deposits in the general fund. The legislature may appropriate half of the annual estimated balance in the account to municipalities. A municipality may receive an appropriation under this section if the municipality doesn't collect property taxes and oil and gas. Again, I'm so sorry. I don't know what it means.
I don't. Representative Gray,
yes.
It's a great question.
Okay.
So this is a piece of the sales tax proposal that allows the state to share 50% of what's collected with certain municipalities, boroughs, at a lower level. And those boroughs and I would just say municipalities, if they do not charge property tax in excess of 10 mils and they don't have an oil and gas production tax or gas pipeline property tax under current statute, then they would be eligible for sharing of the sales tax. And that could be a benefit to some communities within the state of Alaska that maybe are challenged with revenue in their own municipality. So this what this does is allow the state to then establish a procedure for sharing of that sales tax collected with those local municipalities. The effect that it has is that if a municipality has a 20 mil property tax, if they want to receive a portion of the sales tax generated from the growing economy across the state, then they could choose to reduce their property tax down to something less than 10 mils, and the benefit they would receive for that would be revenue from the revenue sharing from the sales tax. And that has a positive impact to Alaskans where they would be paying less in property tax.
Follow up, unless that municipality is collecting sales tax, and then they would lower, then, you know, they already have their own sales tax. So, I mean, I don't know if a municipality would do this, but they could reduce to 10 mils and then they could make up for it by actually increasing their own sales tax. And then our sales tax would be additive on top. And I could see how a municipality could end up with a pretty sizable sales tax. Again, not saying that a municipality would do that, but it might be a way for them to access the statewide sales tax by lowering their property taxes, but making up for it by raising their own municipal sales tax. It would be my fear.
if I follow you, Representative Gray, that the only reason that I could see that a municipality would reduce their property tax to take advantage of the sales tax sharing would be because the sales tax sharing dollar figure is going to be greater than the dollar figure that they receive from their property tax loss when they reduce that property tax rate or the mills from the property tax. They could likewise reduce that property tax down now currently and raise their property or sales tax rate up if their local sales tax rate up to fill that gap as well, meaning just restructure. They could do that now and there's maybe nothing stopping them from doing that. I can only see an advantage of doing that if it's in their best interest to receive a larger dollar figure from the state sales tax than they are from their local property tax. That's the intention of what this.
I understand what you're saying. I just think that they might want to take advantage of what they would call free money from the state. If they were at 20 mills, but they reduced to 10 mills, then they could access this free money, and they might be able to find another way to increase their own.
I follow what you're saying, and I think they could probably do that now anyway. And my philosophical belief is that those tax rates that are paid, those taxes that are paid at the local level are what people feel and what people care about the most. And to the extent that it is very difficult to raise property taxes or sales tax rates in municipalities, then that's a good thing. Representative Gray, do you still maintain your objection of bringing the CS before us?
To the chair, I guess I object in concept to House Bill 109. So for me, I'm going to object to the CS because I object to House Bill 109. So it's philosophically not possible for me to remove my objection, if that makes sense.
I'm not, Representative Gray, trying to pressure you to not remove your objection. I mean, we have a process for that, and yes. If you maintain your objection, I will just ask the staff to call the roll. Brief days. Okay, we're back on the record. And will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Allen?
Yes.
Representative Rowe?
Yes.
Representative McKay?
Yes.
Representative McKay?
Yes.
Representative Gray?
No.
Representative?
Yes.
Chair Carpenter?
Yes. With the vote of 6 yea and 1 nay, where are we at here? House Bill 109, committee substitute for House Bill 109 is now before the committee. And I should say, committee substitute for House Bill 109 is now before the committee. Representative Groh, do you have a question?
Not so much a question. I welcome us continuing to work on the legislation. It's probably not a secret in this room that I think that a sales tax is an inferior policy to other taxes, and I'm very concerned about our ability to pay for this reduction, some would say giveaway, in corporate income taxes to the tune of $350 million a year or more. And I'm also concerned that it's not workable. In terms of the belief that the lower corporate income taxes are going to result in a bonanza of additional jobs. But I'm happy to work on legislation going forward in this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Groh. Representative Allard?
Are we under open dialogue, Chair?
We are having some open dialogue.
Representative Groh, Could you explain to me a little bit on how you came up with your numbers and why you think the income tax is a better route?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
I know, Representative.
Right. The Institute of Socioeconomic Research at the University of Alaska Anchorage carefully analyzed various proposals, and they showed that to raise the $100 million in additional revenue, that the bottom 80% of people in Alaska in terms of income would do better under an income tax and a sales tax. The top 20% would pay more, and the top 1% or 5% would pay substantially more. But the average person in Alaska by far would do better under an income tax than a sales tax. And that to raise $100 million, either a proposal to raise $100 million, either way. But you would, and it's just clear under all the studies that the income tax is a better deal from most Alaskans, just looking at their economic interests, than a sales tax would be.
May I do a follow-up?
Representative Ellard.
Thank you. So just so I can wrap my head around it, would you know the number of the – what percent are you looking at as far as income tax on a family that makes $100,000 a year? And then I would like to know, would you be interested in doing an income tax on retirement? And then I'd like you to explain to me how that benefits Alaskans.
I generally am in favor of a – and I have co-sponsored a high earner tax – that would apply to incomes over that amount of income making that's made over $200,000 a year in Alaska, but also has a $20 a chip in where every person who works in Alaska, both residents and non-residents. It's just really clear in the economic literature that the sales tax hits harder at most people. And across economic levels until you get to the top 20% of income earners, and then it is different. And I just think it's very important to understand, and a lot of the objections that are made about an income tax or a sales tax sometimes to me try to glide around the most basic fact is the question of who's going to pay. And so I just think that's a very important thing for us to consider.
I don't know if that really answered my questions, because I was trying to give you a scenario of a family that makes $100,000 a year, and that's not very much money in the state of Alaska. And so I was wondering if they were retired at one point and then they're earning their money again with a second job, how $100,000 could be impacted by an income tax.
It's, like I said, 80% of Alaskans would do better, and I'll get you the literature on that. Yeah. Okay.
The other thing I'd like to ask is it possible if we as a committee could request the comparisons of those states who don't have the income tax, for example, New Hampshire, Tennessee, maybe do a comparison a little bit so that we could look at that, why an income tax is not a good idea. Or? Yeah.
Okay. So I'm writing it down, comparison between income tax and sales tax for discussion.
Well, I'd like to know how –
with other
Tennessee
states.
And New Hampshire is pretty successful. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'd like Hampshire. To look at that and how it impacts retirement.
And retirement. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'll just say to be explicit, Representative Groh suggested an income tax that would occur on people who make $200,000 or more. So it wouldn't affect a family with $100,000 because they would make half the amount needed to be taxed. What I wanted to point out was that I think an unusual aspect of the seven of us is that we all happen to be bigger PFD people. I don't believe in balancing the budget by cutting the PFD, and that puts me at odds with my caucus. So, and along with Representative Groh, does not believe in balancing the budget with the, so that's what I'm saying. We are both at odds. So there's unity here in that way. But what I would say is that My fear is with a sales tax, especially a broad sales tax, and I brought it up before, is that particularly in rural Alaska, where groceries are extremely high, that at the end of the year, someone can end up paying more in sales tax for just what their daily needs are that would be more than they actually get back from the PFD. And so to me, if the sales tax for a poorer person ends up that they pay more than they're going to get back from their PFD, then to me, I feel like that's almost balancing the budget on the PFD. Their PFD doesn't mean anything to them anymore. And for me, that's kind of my big concern, is that poorer people who would end up having to pay this tax day in, day out for milk, eggs, bread, you know, shampoo, whatever, that they would, at the end of the year, have paid more than $3,000, and their $3,000 PFD would be eaten up. Whereas, I hear people saying that's not correct. And so what I'm here to learn is I would like to be corrected. Thank you.
Representative Gray,
yes.
How about an estimate of a per capita portion of sales tax?
Okay.
As a dollar figure that we can use to analyze this.
That would be great. But I would like it to happen, not just for Anchorage, you know, Kenai and Fairbanks, but I want to know what it's like in Nome and Kotzebue.
Mr. Chairman, I would add Nordvik, Katovik, and Mamak.
Yeah.
In small places. Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Representative McCabe was in the queue, and then I'll come back to you.
So we're talking about villages, and we just mentioned that a village would be able to get in on the revenue sharing. So a village like Nordvik or Katovik would actually maybe as the village itself, not individually, but the village could benefit from this by gaining money for infrastructure and schools and, you know, village councils and transportation and all of that sort of stuff. So I can see it kind of being, you know, might be a little bit harder on some of the folks, but they would also benefit from it. I think that we should probably have some tax or maybe Director Painter in here that can run us through the scenarios. I distinctly remember from the Fiscal Policy Working Group comparing an income tax to a sales tax, and the problem with what the high earner tax is there are just not enough high earners in Alaska. Mm-hmm. There's not enough millionaires. So I love ICER. ICER is a part of the government. ICER's studies ceased to be effective when Governor Dunleavy cut their budget, cut the university's budget, and ICER changed their tune in 2016 from saying that the PFD was the most regressive cut, and now they say something different. So there was a shift in there, and they're also down to one economist, I think, or maybe two, and they used to have like eight. I'm a little concerned that some of those might be biased, and I'm willing to look at it, sure, but I'd like to compare them to other studies, and I think you have a list of things that we can get together and talk about along with a tax person or Director Painter, and we can run through the scenarios with the income tax, the high earner tax that you're talking about. Maybe he can have a spreadsheet. This is what this would earn us. This is what a sales tax would earn us based on the number of people coming to Alaska. I think it would be important to have those kinds of examples for us.
Okay. Representative Groh?
I'll start by saying that I did some work at ICER, both unpaid, paid and unpaid, before and after this shift that Representative McCabe suggests happened. And I detected noticed that shift, and I frankly think that that's just flat wrong. I would also want to answer more directly Representative Allard's question. The ICER study showed that for households with incomes under $125,000, that a sales tax will be more expensive, will cost more than an income tax. And then it's households above $125,000 where the income tax would hit harder. So speaking strictly on economic self-interest in terms of how that would work, the 80% of Alaskans would do better under income tax and sales tax. Although I completely agree with Representative McCabe The cut in the per-employee dividends is the most aggressive of all. And Gray, who's pounding the table here, I completely agree with that. And that's what makes this more complicated here. There are more sides here in Alaska in the fiscal politics than in other states. But as I said, I've made some of my preferences clear. I'm happy to work with the chair of the committee to see what we can do to come up with a good and comprehensive fiscal solution for the very substantial problems that Director Painter's graphics helped show us. Both next year and in the coming years, and that they get worse over time.
Representative Allen?
Thank you, and I appreciate that. And one of the things I think that we're not looking at in the overall picture of an income tax is that when you bite into the, what you would say, high earners, you're biting into the fact that the higher earners donate to nonprofits. They buy more things. There's a aspect of when you do that, you're going to go into their income where they're not going to put back into the economy necessarily. So it's a lack of transparency, too. When you do an income tax, you don't know where your dollars go. We already know that in government. But when you do a sales tax, you absolutely know where it's going because you're getting those groceries. So I think there's a level of transparency, too, and I think income tax is a root of evil. So you have that. But we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
May I jump in for a second?
No.
I would just like to say two things. In the short time that I've been in the legislature, the conversations that I've had with the various members indicate to me that there isn't support, and I could be wrong on this, but there isn't support for passage of a broad-based income tax. So the calculation, it's a calculation on my part, it's an assessment on my part that says if we're going to find a fiscal plan to move forward that doesn't include an elimination of the PFD in a few years, then what is possible is what we should be looking at, maybe not what is best, because we don't have an agreement on what is best. That is all subject to 60 different legislators' opinions around, right? The second thing that I would like to say in response to the discussion on sales tax versus income tax and the analysis that has been presented that compares basically regressivity or who pays the tax, right? And to the extent that the goal as presented by the legislature to this committee is to help grow the economy, economic growth is another way to say that is wealth creation. And from a business person's point of view, it takes money to make money. So if I'm looking to the sectors or the individuals or the organizations within an economy, within a state, who are going to be able to capitalize on opportunity that exists to grow business, to add jobs to the economy, those are the entities and the people who have the means, the money, the savings, the investment, the business capital, the relationships with banks, to have access to funds. They are the ones that are going to grow the economy. It's not the government, and it's not everybody within our economy that has the opportunity or the capacity to grow business. If a analysis was done on the impact of an ability to grow, to invest in economic activity spread across per capita, who within the population is not going to be able to invest in new business? It would be people that are living paycheck to paycheck. It would be the lower income earners within the state, right? So there is a balance that we have to strike between who pays taxes and who has the money available to grow the economy, because that is the ultimate goal. If we want better education and better roads and better social services, is to have an economy that can support that. And as we recognize, the economy that's going to support the demand for increased services right now is going to be the permanent fund earnings. It is the only thing that's consistently growing, and it is the target of this legislature. So if the members of the legislature are feeling pressure from home that says, hey, you know what, the PFD is really important to us, and we don't want to see it disappear, then we have to find something that's feasible, that's doable within the 60 members of this legislature to restructure how we do taxes and spending in order to make sure that that PFD stays around. I don't think that we have, and this is a judgment call on my part, and it has to be a judgment call on all 60 members, right? I don't think that we've got the will to have an income tax, but we probably have the will for a sales tax. And that is where I will leave that conversation. Representative Gray, do you have another comment?
I do.
Okay, go right ahead.
Thank you. I want to say to the chair that I agree with a lot of what you said, and I think that we need a fiscal plan, and I want to be a part of making sure that we have a fiscal plan. And I, although I agree with my colleague that I prefer an income tax over a sales tax, I think a sales tax is something that we could probably get across the finish line in a way that we couldn't with the income tax, as much as that hurts me to say. This is me saying some quiet parts out loud. It's maybe me stopping and not saying it, but someone in the building has talked about, you know, you could put a 0% sales tax in. You can pass some taxes and have them at 0%. No one's going to be opposed to 0%. And then you have it when you need it. That's a fiscal plan. That's not balancing the budget, but that's creating a fiscal plan, is putting tools in place that we can use when we need them. When we don't need them, we don't need to use them, but the tools can be there. And so I think what I would like, I mean, I know that people from certain districts are absolutely constitutionally opposed to an income tax, but would they be opposed to a 0% income tax?
Yes.
There's one out of 60 that gave you an answer. To answer your question, I would say that to the extent that the model that we have has an ability to model when a tax, which fiscal year a tax would be implemented, we might be able to get to that conversation, is how many years at zero before you're going to need one. We might be able to model that. And if the model needs to change, then we can ask Director Painter to do that for us. And that might get to that answer. If that's a political decision that the body needs to consider to get a plan, is to have a what would some people would call a stair-step approach, then we should have that we should at least be open to having that conversation.
Matt.
Representative Allen.
Yeah, I just want to make sure on the record that when I said I'm zero income tax, I don't mean like I don't want one. I don't want it to seem like I'm saying no, I'm open to having it. I didn't want that being misconstrued on the record. Okay. That's all.
Thank you, Representative Allard. Representative Groh.
I would say, since Representative Gray brought it up, there's obviously divisions in more than one caucus over what the level of the permanent dividend should be and what particular taxes should be considered. But what I am impressed by is the leadership of you, Mr. Chairman, and you, Madam Speaker, in helping to bring us together so that we can come to a good solution to this difficult but very pressing issue. Where we have these giant deficits both next year and in future years. So thanks a lot. And I'm feeling happier and more optimistic.
I'm glad you're happy, Representative Groh. Thank you.
I hope they remember this when the pendulum swings and you are in the majority and we are not.
I'm sure.
Our kindness.
I'm sure okay. Hugging skills
well. All right. All right. Are there any other questions about the bill that's before us? It's been a great conversation, and I appreciate the open dialogue and the respect for each other and our diverse opinions. Okay. Seeing there are no more questions or comments, we will be adjourned as of 7:09 p.m. Thank you.